This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. We've had conversations on this program about race and racial tensions many times, but one scholar says we've got it all wrong. We shouldn't be talking about race because that's relatively meaningless. He wants to shift the conversation about bias from race to skin color. Ron Hall is a professor of social work at Michigan State University. So tell us, how is race different from skin color?
Well, race is merely a proxy for skin color. Skin color we can define and we can measure. Race is just a political and social construct that we've used since the antebellum. More and more as we get closer to the next century, past this recent millennium, we're going to come to a time when you won't be able to look at individuals and differentiate their so-called race based on their hair texture, eye color, skin colors, etc., as I think racial miscegenation indeed will be the norm at that point.
So let's talk about this idea of skin color can be measured. I mean, you know, you're talking about gradations and a person of Asian Indian background or African background may have similar skin tone, but they're not treated the same, at least in this society.
No. The skin tone of African Americans varies, and we're talking about the amount of melanin that an individual has. And what I'm trying to inform people about when I talk about the issue of skin color, it's more than just racism. When we discriminate on the basis of how much melanin an individual has in their skin. So an Indian Asian will be similarly discriminated against if they're dark-complected as a dark-complected African-American. And in fact, Indian Asians amongst their own population will suffer from various forms of skin color discrimination. And that's an extension of the caste system, which goes back thousands of years. And in fact, the term caste comes from the Portuguese casa, and casa means breed, like an animal.
In your article published by The Conversation, you talk about skin color being an issue within the African-American community. How does that play out?
That has been going on since the antebellum period. Of course, you had some individuals who were the offspring of the propertied class, the master class. And those individuals were oftentimes educated, oftentimes lived a better standard of living, and oftentimes they were more intellectually gifted because of the education that some of them got. As a matter of fact, if you go back to the early years during the antebellum in Louisiana, there were some African-descended individuals who were quote-unquote mixed race who might even be educated at the Sorbonne in Paris. And if you look at the leadership early on, many of your intellectuals, W.E.B. Du Bois, William Monroe Trotter, were mixed race individuals. They were committed to the black community, but as Du Bois called them, the talented 10th, they were a little more advantaged because of they were the offspring of the master class.
Let's talk about the conversations today among people in the black community, because you know, we've seen it in different situations on TV and documentaries where the darker you are, sometimes that is a status in itself because those who are more light-skinned aren't black enough.
Yes.
And then there are people who are very light-skinned who are considered to be, I don't know how to put it, but they're somehow better just because they have lighter skin. So tell me how that works out today.
Today is nothing more than an extension of the past, and I'm sorry to say it may even be intensified because the level of interracial marriages, the level of miscegenation stands to only increase. Now, I've done studies, and there are other individuals who have done studies where I've correlated income, education, and occupation with skin color. And that's regardless of what your ethnic group is. If I talk about Indian Asians, African Americans, and Latinos, the lighter complected you are, the less threatening you are to mainstream society. Therefore, you're likely to earn more money, get better jobs, and likely to aspire to a higher rate of education. Now, I use President Obama as an example, not to suggest that he was able to become president because he was lighter complected, but I'm suggesting that because of his lighter complexion, there are obstacles that he did not have to overcome had he been a darker complected individual. And that crosses racial lines, it crosses ethnic and cultural lines.
So is this just simply learned behavior? Are we hardwired somehow to see, and you'll have to excuse the terms, but white is better, dark is not? How do we keep arriving at this conclusion?
Well, a lot of it doesn't get talked about in an economic context, but it's really economic. If you go back to the 1400s, sometime prior to the Atlantic slave trade, status was not contingent upon race. As a matter of fact, the concept didn't even exist. Status was contingent upon your culture or religious background. And after the slave trade, we had to find a way to separate slaves from slave masters. So we created this identity around white. As a matter of fact, there's a Princeton history professor by the name of Nell Painter. She's written one of the most interesting books that I've ever read in my life called The History of White People. And when I picked it up and I began reading it, the most salient point in the book that she talks about whites and blacks, when they initially arrived here in this what was to become the U.S., got along fine. Then individuals were Dutch, they were Irish, they were French. Those working class Dutch, Irish, and French got along well with African Americans, Latinos, and other people of color. You had a 2% wealthy Euro-Americans who were being raided and robbed by this common class of individuals. And they had to find a way to get the poorer Europeans to identify with the wealthy Europeans, who they otherwise wanted nothing to do with. And they convinced them that they're not Irish or British or Dutch, but that they're white. And they gave them a few more advantages, privileges. They could testify in court. They might be able to carry weapons, which non-Europeans couldn't do. And from that point, you see poor Euro-Americans, individuals who might reside in Appalachia, for example, should support the policies of someone like President Obama vis-a-vis health care. But they typically define their political leanings in a racial context. So you have always had a wealthy class of individuals who are exploiting the rest of the poor classes, common man, for racial reasons to sustain themselves. And until we get the economics out of race, unfortunately, I hate to say, it's probably always going to be with us.
You're something of an outlier. I mean, most scholars who talk about ethnicity talk about race. When they talk about things like racial profiling and so forth, how much traction are you getting among your colleagues in arguing, forget about race, let's talk about skin color?
I'm getting a lot more than I had anticipated, but you have to bear in mind that I've been writing about this issue and studying it for, if you count my dissertation work, 25, 30 years. I testified as an expert witness in the nation's first case of skin color discrimination, Morrill versus the Internal Revenue Service, which involved a light-skinned and a dark-skinned African-American. 10 years prior, in 1980, you had a similar case involving Latinos. That's Felix versus Manquez. Since that case, or those two cases, there had literally been hundreds of cases filed on the basis of not racial discrimination, but skin color discrimination. This has always been an issue, but as I subtitle my first book, The Color Complex, The Last Taboo Among African Americans, it's something that people are not comfortable talking about in public discourse. And as a behavioral scientist, I have to go where the facts lead me. So some people are going to be upset about it, and that's unfortunate.
Bottom line this for us. What does society, and I'm talking about U.S. society, gain in shifting the conversation from race to skin color?
My biggest point in that shift, it's much less polarizing. Regardless of where I speak, where I might lecture, typically, unless they're an unusual audience, most Euro-Americans, when they talk about the subject of race or someone's going to lecture on race or racism, they've heard it all before. And so you kind of get this shutdown. You begin to talk past people rather than to people. But when I talk about skin color, in fact, it is possible for a person of European descent to be discriminated against on the basis of complexion. For example, if you are a very dark-complected Greek or Italian. You may suffer similar forms of discrimination. So we're not talking about divisions by race. We're talking about divisions by humanity. And I think it's much less threatening to talk about it in that fashion. Secondly, as I mentioned a little earlier, I can quantify skin color. I can measure the amount of melanin, which is that ingredient that gives us our color. I can measure that. So it's much more amenable to science and less amenable to our bias.
Ronald Hall is a professor of social work at Michigan State University. His article is titled, Who Counts as Black? You can find it at theconversation.com. Professor Hall, thanks very much.
Thank you very much, and I hope you can contact me at the Skin Color Doctor.